is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
The Ukraine conflict, what we know so far, is coming from remarks out of Moscow. And the remarks are illustrative of something either profound or underway that we can't judge yet in Russian affairs. The men who are speaking are warlords. They're not generals, they're warlords, and they're speaking out to the public, not only in Russia, but around the world. I welcome Colonel Jeff McCausin, United States Army retired artilleryman. He is CBS News. He's Diamond Six Leadership and Strategy CEO. He's a visiting professor at Dickinson College. Jeff, it's odd now to move away from the battlefield momentarily and deal with two personalities who are warlords in Russia, have been for some time. Yes, there's Prigozhin of the Wagner Group, who's speaking about his success at Bakhmut, if you call rubble pile a success. And now we have a man named Kadyrov, who is not a Russian. He's a Chechen, and he wears a fierce beard, and he's surrounded by loyal killers. The Kadyrov is now said to be, according to the news, out of Russia, to be employed in Ukraine, not only in Ukraine, but in Bakhmut, while Prigozhin is speaking daily against Shoigu, the defense minister, against the Kremlin's leadership, against all of the army. I can't sort this out. Can you help me, Jeff? Good evening to you.
Well, good evening to you, John. I'll do my best. And it seems to me, at least, Mr. Putin has been trying to play off those that might actually be a threat to him around his inner circle. And that would include certainly that Prigozhin as the head of the Wagner Group might well also include Kadyrov, a Chechen, though I can't think of him as a direct threat to Putin, as well as Shoigu, the defense minister, and others. As far as the deployment of Chechens, Kadyrov's forces into the Bakhmut area, don't forget that now following all that fighting and the Wagner Group, even Prigozhin has admitted, having suffered tens of thousands of casualties, he has announced he's pulling the Wagner Group out of Bakhmut. Now, in the last day or so, he's extended the timeline for that withdrawal, I think to like the 5th or 6th of June, but has clearly said, I'm pulling out, which therefore leaves a gap in the line. Russians have got to fill that in some way, and perhaps turning to Kadyrov might be a way to do that, absent putting in more Russian soldiers from the army, which they seem to be in short supply. But clearly what I think people are doing is positioning themselves now in some type of, potentially at least, internal struggle in Russia looking towards the future. Mr. Putin, so far, as I said, has played these guys one off against another. Whether that strategy will be successful as we go into the future remains to be seen. And you're right, John, it is warlordism. Each one has an army. Shoigu has a private army. And by some count, there are up to 14 private armies who are indebted to one person or the other throughout the Russian Federation.
The battlefield is, again, fog of war, but Bakhmut has said to be the center of the Russian ambition these many months. Now that the Ukrainian forces have withdrawn from the center of the battle, the Russians are claiming a victory. To what end, Jeff? Does Bakhmut serve any strategic purpose that you can see from the battlefield, from the map of Ukraine?
Well, I think at one point in time it may have, but that was many, many months ago, maybe as much as even almost a year ago, when they were going to, I think, move beyond from that to other larger cities, kind of course, and places like that. But now they don't have the forces to exploit any kind of operational success their quote-unquote victory provides them in Bakhmut. Bakhmut really, I think, became more symbolic and political than it became military over time. The Russians seeking to capture a city, and they hadn't captured a city since like last July. So Bakhmut, a city relatively small, about 80,000, took on that symbolism. I think their goal actually was to capture Bakhmut prior to Victory Day. So on the 9th of May, when they celebrated Victory Day, they could hold this up to the Russian people as a major success. Well, obviously that failed, number one. Number two, as you rightfully point out, we've captured a pile of rubble. We don't have the means to exploit that. And along the way, since December, we have suffered 100,000 casualties, probably 20 to 30,000 of that 100,000 dead in and around Bakhmut. So the Russians have suffered grievously, and that was kind of, the Ukrainians' goal. Could we bleed, if you will, Russian forces and use Bakhmut as the area to do that?
Over these last days, there have been reports, not confirmable, it's the fog of war, of the Russian Volunteer Corps and other names of said to be anti-Putin Russians operating with American equipment, so goes the allegation, out of Ukraine, cross-border. There's another incident within these last hours, a shelling and tanks operating. What does this mean about discipline on the Ukrainian side? What does it mean about discipline on the Russian side, Jeff?
Well, I think on the Ukrainian side, what it means is that Ukrainians are going to exercise what we would call in the United States plausible deniability. And they will say, well, we have no control over these people. They are anti-Russians. And we encourage that type of attitude in Russia, but we have no control over them. Oh, by the way, still in all, they were gathered together significant military equipment, apparently artillery, in some cases some tanks, so not an insignificant military force. On the Russian side, of course, this, I think, has a potentially an enormous psychological effect. The war has now come to visit Russia, whereas for the last 15 months, of course, it was on Ukrainian soil. It was Ukrainian cities which have been pounded severely for the last 15 months. Kyiv has been hit for the last 4 or 5 days, to my recollection. But now actually we see cities and territory being taken, which is actually Russian. Drone attacks we saw a few days ago in and around Moscow. And we've seen mill bloggers now in Russia decrying the Russian government's ability to protect their people. We see them talking about withdrawing Russians from border areas. Heretofore, it was all these Ukrainians being pulled out of border areas. So this may actually have a potential significant psychological blow on the Russian population at the same moment, of course, that the Ukrainians are preparing for this very, very well and very important counteroffensive.
London is reporting carefully that the Ministry of Defense in Moscow is known for exaggerating. But at the same time, there's this statement out of Moscow. Ukrainian terrorist formations with forces of up to 2 motorized infantry companies, reinforced with tanks, attempted to invade the territory of the Russian Federation. What is the scale of 2 motorized infantry companies? Is that several hundred men with heavy equipment? And would it have, I guess it would have drone elements as well.
Might well have drone elements. An infantry mechanized company, probably 100 to 150 soldiers. So a couple of those would be about 300, supported apparently by some artillery, maybe an artillery battery or two, another 100, 200 soldiers. Probably have some drone support as well, either for surveillance and targeting or perhaps for use in a suicide drone fashion or dropping munitions. So not an insignificant military force. But these are clearly not forces that are going to be able to take territory and then exploit that and continue on eastward, and probably forces that I would describe this more as a raid than an invasion, because it doesn't sound to me like they're of the size that could sustain holding that particular territory for a significant military period of time. But that also, of course, may force the Russians to divert military forces to that area, divert resources to that area. And clearly one thing that the Ukrainians are doing is looking at the battlefield and trying to examine what are the most vulnerable spots where they might conduct this offensive. So as they see Russian forces being withdrawn, perhaps redeployed to these areas, that may open up opportunities for them in the future. So in the aggregate, this could be, John, part of that shaping operations that we've been talking about for the last couple of weeks.
We go to the DOD side. This from the DOD via Defense One in these last hours. The Pentagon announced another $300 million in weapons headed to Ukraine, including lots more ammunition for various air defense systems, including Patriot rounds, AIM-7 missiles, Avenger air defense systems, even unspecified munitions for unmanned aerial systems. There's more artillery in there, as well as tank rounds, AT-4 anti-tank weapons, Stinger anti-aircraft, aircraft rockets, mine-clearing equipment. Good heavens, Jeff. There's enough here to start a war. Is this the counteroffensive?
I think it's part and parcel of it, John. As we talked before when the contact group met about a week or so ago, one thing they want to assure the Ukrainians is not only that they have sufficient ammunition and supplies in place, but that there's a flow established to keep that going. If, in fact, this counteroffensive were to be successful, you might see the demands for more ammunition accelerating pretty quickly. That's one thing that happens on offensive. If you move really fast, as we did during the Gulf War, we found we had more ammunition than were required. If you get bogged down, you may have less. So you're trying to make sure the flow is sufficient to keep things moving. And as you point out, a couple of things that come to mind to me immediately, artillery ammo will be important. Second of all, air defense systems. Make sure we can control the air because, of course, We're largely dependent on air defense systems, if Ukraine, to keep the Russian air off of that offensive coming in from the top. And then, of course, things like mine clearing. You're only going to have mine clearing if you're going on the offensive. We know the Russians have put in extensive obstacles all along the 600-mile front to include a massive amount of landmines. So mine clearing equipment that can open gaps in those minefields and do so quickly that you can then exploit rapidly with armor-heavy formations would be key and essential to the kind of a counteroffensive that I believe the Ukrainians want to conduct.
A counteroffensive and offensive, a position of great risk. The books say you need a 3-to-1 advantage. Is that still accurate given all of the machinery on the battlefield, Jeff?
Yeah, I would say 3-to-1 is still an accurate number that you should try to try for. But remember, you only need 3-to-1 at the place where you're going to put your main attack in. You don't need 3-to-1 all along that 1,000-mile or 1,000-kilometer, I should say, front line. And that's the challenge for the Russians as well for the Ukrainians. Both sides are trying to figure out where is the best spot that we can conduct that attack. The Russians obviously want to see that identified and reinforce it. The Ukrainians want to identify that and exploit it. But the Russians have, I think, in some ways, a bigger challenge. They've got to be successful all along that front. The Ukrainians only have to be successful at some place where they can make a major breakthrough and then move through it, and that might collapse the entire front line.
I'm speaking with Colonel Jeff McCausin, United States Army retired, an artilleryman, CBS News, Dickinson College visiting professor, CEO of Diamond Six Leadership and Strategy, also a veteran of NATO, and we turn there next because there's hesitation, according to European reports. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.